Jeff Gill, you know him well, Millennial Strategies, and we welcome him. Haven't spoke to him since the election. That's too long. And we say a very good morning and a belated Happy New Year to you, sir. How are you?
It is a fabulous day for America, and I'm doing quite well.
Speaking of that, the Marine One on the lawn of the White House right now, waiting the president's departure. Give me your thoughts. You know, it's a kind of a turning of the page, new year, fresh faces, fresh outlooks, kind of a cleansing to many. What's the mindset as far as you're concerned on this day?
It still remains kind of an Orwellian moment, despite what is imminent. A lot of the norms of the peaceful transition of power that has been a long cherished American tradition remain ignored by the president, the individual who's president of the United States for the next 4 hours, and his administration, and Biden will take office in this strangest of American moments, amidst a pandemic, while Washington is under virtual military occupation. And all of those things are monsters of the president's own making. So it's kind of surreal. Having attended a couple of inaugurations myself, I certainly miss the pageantry that normally goes with this. I attended one of Obama's inaugurations and one of George W. Bush's inaugurations, and in both instances, it was a joyous occasion. And this is certainly a more subdued and sober moment, and I just pray that it it goes off peacefully for all folks involved.
No question. It's you got the tape message last night. You see what Joe Biden is doing with the 17 or so executive orders that he'll sign after being sworn in. You look at Donald Trump. You kind of look back on the years, and I said he did some great things. And, you look at the numbers, 38% approval, not approving the way he handled COVID, which did him in, obviously, in my opinion, on November 3rd. But that being said, what do you look at as the guy's legacy over the last couple of years? And listen, COVID definitely wiped out a lot of the good, the insurrection 2 weeks ago, no question. What do you see leaving his mark at the White House?
There are plenty of presidents who throughout history who are unfortunately judged by their worst moment, not their best, right? You look at a guy like Ulysses Grant, who was incredibly progressive, towards the newly freed African Americans after the Civil War, but yet it was the internal corruption and mismanagement of that administration that he's remembered for. You look at James Buchanan, the president who came before Abraham Lincoln, and you see historians judge him by the fact that he essentially committed treason and allowed the South to seceded. And irrespective of any perceived achievement by the Trump administration, turning a blind eye to this pandemic and then inciting the deadly and horrific insurrection of our nation's capital, committing what I think was an act of treason in plain sight, will always be what he's remembered for. You can talk about some economic and foreign policy accomplishments that can be dubiously argued, but those moments in time will be etched in America's collective consciousness forever and cannot be undone. And that is how this president will be remembered. And I do believe when historians have taken their full breath of the last 4 years of this presidency, they will rank him among the very nadir, the very bottom of individuals who have held this office.
Even though, and listen, you can make the case, Jeff, he did good things. I look at foreign policy in the Middle East. I look at the strength he had against China in many fronts as far as tariffs and whatnot. He held a line, very strong, the Xi. Yet, you know, the taking out of Soleimani, the taking out of al-Baghdadi, crushing, I mean crushing ISIS, he did. He did a very good job. Yet, I have a feeling a lot of that good will be overlooked. I really believe that. I think it'll be overlooked, especially with an impeachment trial pending and the ultimate thinking of a conviction so that he doesn't run in 2024.
I think that's right. I'm not saying that his presidency was without achievement, certainly on the foreign policy level. I concede this point to you. However, you know, if you look back in the annals of history, you know, Nixon was probably the last liberal president before Obama. He founded the EPA. I mean, he did a lot of really positive things when he was in office prior to Watergate and prior to, you know, all of the crimes that resulted in that. But that's how he's remembered. Often, history can be unkind when your worst day is as bad as some of these people's worst day. And Trump's worst day was treasonous. It was sedition of the highest order. And Mitch McConnell has all but admitted that. Republican leadership has all but admitted that as they now try to distance themselves from him. Unfortunately, you know, that legacy will be on full display today, as you see a hyper militarized, occupied Washington, the likes of which we have not seen since 1865, as Biden takes the oath of office today.
You know, I'm just wondering how much will be on display in the next couple of years when votes are up for the likes of Josh Hawley, for the likes of the Kevin McCarthy's and the Ted Cruz's. I'm just wondering, you know, as we go forward, where many really, you know, felt as they did on November the 3rd, making change and whatnot. I'm wondering what's next in store in 22 and 24, as far as people really never forgetting. And certainly those individuals and others of extreme power could be taken to task the next time it's in the hands of the voter. I'm just wondering what happens down the road, sir.
I certainly wonder the same thing. There's a very tenuous, margin between the Democrats and the Republicans in the House in 2022. It's going to take an extraordinary job of federal leadership by Biden and Harris to be able to hold on to the leadership in the House of Representatives. The Senate map in 22 and 24 is not as favorable to the Democrats as it was this past year. So there is certainly going to be a need to provide transformational change for the American people in the form of a stimulus package, in the form of an infrastructure package, in the form of making good on this pledge to vaccine 100 million individuals in the first 100 days. You know, these kinds of things must happen in order for the Democrats to maintain control in the chamber. And, you know, as it pertains to the Hawleys and Cruises of the world, there was certainly some manner of dark calculus that went into this decision-making process that was, I think people of all political stripes can agree was inherently political. There was no policy reason to outright dispute the results of the election and to call for that vote at that time, especially on that day, notably by Hawley. There must have been some empirical data that pointed him in that direction, that this is how you further your career. And how that manifests itself, and what becomes of the president's base, such as it is, will become clear today, depending on the magnitude of the protests that we witness, and will further manifest itself when we see what the Republican Party looks like in 2022. There's talk of the president talking about forming a different political party, the Patriot Party, such as it is, which could shatter the Republican Party as we know it. But irrespective of any of that, this is a stark moment of reckoning not just for Republicans, but for independents and Democrats, too. And Jay, I should just mention that the president and the first lady have exited the White House and are heading towards Marine One as we speak.
Yep, absolutely. Very solemn moment as the president is exiting and ready to head to Marine One, walking over a little bit to the crowd. Not much of a crowd, but I
think
president
it's
wearing his red tie. Huh?
I think it's just the credentialed reporters who were there. There's actual supporters waiting for him at Andrews Air Force Base, where he's imminently headed to.
No question. Jeff Giel with us, Millennial Strategies. Let's fast forward here. Locally, the vaccine rollout has been a disaster, we know. I've been critical of Governor Cuomo. Now, I understand the onus falls on the government and everything else. Certainly, they didn't come through with the promise, the 20 million as far as dosages at the end of the year. Not even close. But what infuriates me more is the supply when it is there and you're only inoculating half of it. That's an issue. Instead of the finger pointing and the blame game and the threats and the fines and everything else, let's divvy out this vaccine. Listen, we know we're in short supply. We know the demand exceeds the supply, but could we at least use the supply to the fullest before we start whining out there and pointing fingers and whatnot here? So I know there's blame everywhere, but I'll tell you one thing. We're not doing a good job in the state of New York. I'll tell you that much, Jeff.
Yeah, I certainly can argue with you on this one. You know, the federal government is certainly to blame to a certain extent for only providing, you know, 300,000 doses per week and then cutting that number as the CDC simultaneously expanded the pool of people. I mean, that is gross mismanagement on the part of the federal government. But then on the state level, some of these private sector actors, that have been lucky enough to receive the vaccine have also grossly mismanaged its application. I mean, the governor in his press conference the day before yesterday talked about Long Island hospitals and their capacity to administer the vaccine, and it was shocking to see that I believe it was St. Catherine of Siena in Smithtown had only given out 53% of their allotment. Now I understand Smithtown is a conservative area; you're going to have people who don't want the vaccine, but 53% is unacceptable. Good Samaritan, right by where I live in Babylon, was at about 87%, also unacceptable. There are plenty of hospitals in Nassau and Suffolk who have given out 100% of their allotment, and we must hit that number. We're talking about trying to get our collective population to herd immunity, which means 70-odd percent of us, if you listen to the experts, must get the vaccine. There has not been a robust effort to educate folks about why the vaccine is important. You still have healthcare workers who won't take it. In addition to that, there are private sector actors who are just either unwilling or incapable of answering the bell at this absolutely critical moment. And the onus is on the state to correct that. Now, I do think that if and when the federal government militarizes the process, that there will be more doses available. I think the governor was right to go to Moderna and Pfizer and try to purchase the vaccine directly through them without using the feds as a middleman. If anything, that's a good political tactic to move the federal government in the right way. You've seen the governor use those kinds of tactics on a variety of levels. But right now, you know, the fact that if you're someone who's 65 or over, and you go online or you make a phone call and try to book your inoculation, it's almost impossible to get an appointment, is a disgrace. It needs to be cleaned up.
You know, I got a sister who's a teacher. I got another sister who has a compromise deal. Listen, the fact of the matter is, and folks, the Department of Health, you know, they are the ones who, you know, put the plan out there. Okay, the governor, the DOH. And, you know, anytime it might, listen, I'm not a Zucker fan. You know that, Howard Zucker fan. I thought he's despicable, deplorable, the way he's handled the COVID situation, especially with nursing homes. We don't have to rehash that, March 25th and all that stuff. But this is his deal. And when people can't get on a website, when people can't even call a phone number because it crashes, so many are calling and need answers, need clarification, that's a big issue to me, you know? And this is where Zucker again drops the ball. And you can't have that right now. You know, you're going to tell me a link was compromised as far as Stony Brook University the other day with 20,000 signed up, then all of a sudden canceled, then there was some reinstatement? I mean, come on. You know, we got to get this thing right, and especially when we have supply. And you know something? With the plan, can we make sure we don't fall into the testing mistakes from way back with COVID, right? Remember the testing mistakes? Things popped up on the run here. You know, we have to have the plan. We have to have learned from the testing mistakes and already implement the sites. We must put things in play. And it seems like as we go along, we're thinking of ways to improve. We can't have that. We need to have the plan in place. That's where I find fault with the DOH and the governor right now.
I think the blame really starts at the top of the federal government, who has not provided the necessary guidance and also turned down the opportunity to buy hundreds of millions of more vaccines than we currently have in our stockpile. You know, ultimately, the states take their guidance from the federal government, and you've had a president who has been absent for the last month while plotting that macabre list of pardons that came out last night. And obviously, there was a lack of understanding at the federal level as to how many vaccines they actually had. And obviously, there were not enough vaccines to be able to evenly be distributed throughout the state. And when the information from the top can't be trusted and is limited, you're inherently going to have problems. And that's what manifested itself here. And if you compound that by the fact that the state has to rely on a wide variety of private sector actors whose competence is mixed at best, you're going to have this outcome. I think the state was trying to play ball with the federal government when the CDC came out and said, you know, we should inoculate 65 plus. But at the end of the day, you know, that created this massive surge of engagement among that population, because, you know, like you're looking at basically an amount of people that is tantamount to the population of New York City as far as adult capable people is now eligible for the vaccine. And you know, there was just no way the system would not implode on itself if the federal government was unable to answer the task. And you know, this will be the first test of the Biden presidency to make this happen.
Right, no question. This is trial one. You know, I didn't like the $100 million deal for the first 100 days. You know what? It seems low to me, right? We got 350 million plus people here. Two doses, let's not forget, needed via Moderna and Pfizer. You know, let's shoot higher. You know, let's not put a number on it. Let's just attack it. Let's get to the manufacturing of it all through Pfizer and Moderna. Make sure there is enough out there being made so that we can distribute it properly. We know the past administration now has dropped the ball vehemently on this. But right now, this has to be prior one for this new president coming into play. As soon as he gets out of taking the oath, I mean, it is right there for him. Let's attack it. Let's get COVID under control. We know the surge has taken place based on the holidays. We're looking at the numbers here on the island. Positivity rates, they are going down by the day. That's a good thing. But right now, it's about getting this medicine out to those who want it and need it. And it's very important stuff right now. Department of Health with a huge job here locally to make sure that game plan is implemented properly. So we will keep. You almost wish, Jeff, that Long Island was its own entity, so to speak, so that they can make the decisions for themselves as far as the divvying out of this vaccine. It is dire right now that we get this under control. Final thoughts, sir.
I'm sure folks in New York City feel the same way about that, too. You know, but the one thing that I think is overlooked, and has certainly been overlooked by the federal government, and one thing that the incoming Biden administration has to do is find a way to educate Americans about the necessity of getting the vaccine. You know, like, just because you're eligible doesn't mean you're going to get it. And there is a ton of misinformation and a lack of acceptance of science in this country right now that stems from the rhetoric of the outgoing president. Let's call it what it is. There's a robust anti-vax movement here on Long Island that's been around for a long time. But if folks don't understand the importance of getting the vaccine, if folks don't take the vaccine, we're not going to get to 70%. We're not going to get to herd immunity. And this scourge, this malfeasant virus, won't go away. This has been a moment where all of us had to do our part. We've all had to wear masks, restrict our movement, live life in a different way. If you want that back, if you want to go to ball games and have barbecues and do all that fun stuff, get the vaccine. Vaccines save lives. It's really important. And I really hope that the incoming administration stresses this and educates folks as to how critical it is to get that jab in your arm and end this dark moment in our history on so many levels.
Jeff Keel, Millennial Strategies. Until the next time, let's not make it a long gap either. I look forward to talking with you, sir. You stay well. Wish the family
pleasure,
and everything else good things, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Take care.